tell you about Birkenstocks. Welcome.
You caught me off guard.
Hey, you gotta be on guard. On guard! Welcome to the Devolution Podcast, episode 20. Whoa, I should have a little horn to blow. Blowing horns. thanks for being here, and I got a question for you. What's my motherfucking name? I'm Ja Rule. You guys remember Ja Rule?
Oh, Ja Rule. What's Jar?
Jar of Rules.
Ja Rule.
Ja Rule. Wow.
Up to now.
Drool is, I don't know what Drool is up to these days, but he's probably doing something. He's yelling. He always yelled, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was always yelling.
He was like, he was on par with DMX.
Was that like, that was just the thing of the time.
Ah, what's my name?
Just yelling at you all the time.
What's my motherfucking name? 2010 had some good tunes, man.
I was going through them today and was...
From the window to the wow, to the sweat drop down my ball, to all these bitches scrawl. Skate, 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 motherfucker. I'll skate, skate, goddamn. From the window to the wow, to the sweat drops down my balls. Skate, skate, a skate, skate, a skate, skate, skate. I get low.
Oh, it was that whole, remember the whole Fire Festival? Was that, was Ja Rule?
Right? Oh, Ja Rule with Fire Fest. Yeah, oh yeah, Ja. Drool, what are you doing? Ripping off a bunch of yuppies. Good for you, Drool. You did it. You did it, my friend. All right, yeah, we have a fun episode here. We're going to talk about the 2000s, man. Remember them? Remember those years?
I do.
I was a little...
I remember those years.
I was a teenager. Raging with
Rage-ager.
I was a rage-ager in the early 2000s. This was a great year. I mean, these really were our, the years, our coming of age years, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
This was...
She doesn't want to speak about these years, apparently.
I don't know, my brain just like blipped out for a second.
No.
This was... our time when we were truly establishing who we are today.
From the window!
This is why my brain blips out, because I'm just constantly being interrupted by
you're
you.
You're going to get barraged by dickheadedness. yeah, it's a fun episode. We might talk about the darkest day in American history a little bit, but, you know, other than that, it's a joy. It's a fucking joy.
A joy.
So, I don't know, shall we, get it started in here? Let's get it started. Get it started in here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh man, the 2000s were the best time for music.
There was a lot of good dance tunes.
Yeah, yeah.
Some serious dancing happening in the 2000s.
Oh, there was dancing,
the early
baby.
2000s.
Oh, yeah, there was. In the early ta-ta-ta-ta-tas.
The early ta-tas.
In the early ta-tas. Mature ta-tas. In the early 2000s, we saw a big shift in horror in my opinion. It was kind of hitting its full potential. Because we had, you know, expert storytellers. We had years of progress in makeup and technology. And there was some, you could put some money behind this shit a little bit.
I feel like people were really watching.
Yeah.
Also, like, I know just everybody in high school, they were really watching horror movies.
Yeah.
Felt more mainstream.
Yeah, for sure. That's why the end of this, the, like, honorable mention section of this is really long, because there was way more movies than we had time to get into. And we jump around a little bit this episode. We'll get into that. But honestly,
Trusty Rusty's really going to be working.
Trusty Rusty, we changed the, we had to switch some fluids. Not switch, we switched its fluids with another better time machine. And here we are. So, yeah, I mean, seriously, the 2000s for me were all about, like, going to shows and smoking stupid-sized blunts and watching horror movies.
Yeah.
That's all I did.
Seems right.
Yep. And audiences such as myself and as thus yourself. as well as creators had, started to become desensitized from the years of fervently observing the big screen carnage that we all enjoy so much.
Yeah.
And we all grew up with at this point. Like,
yeah.
Everyone our age just grew up with this shit. Like, what from when we were kids up, and then now we're teenagers, and we'd already been watching it for 15, 16 fucking years, and, you know, people who are, 10 years older than us had also grown up with it. And a lot of these young creators were about to really change up the game in this decade. Like, it was definitely a big shift from the end of the 90s until the end of this decade. Like, horror took some pretty wild fucking turns that,
I feel
that
like
we're going to
the come 90s at. Had a lot more cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were definitely cheesy.
Yeah, for sure.
But then it started to shift, to, I think, to be a little more creepy, or the ones that you think about when you're laying in bed at night after you've watched something, and they kind of like seep into your thoughts.
Ooh, yes. So, in the early 2000s, we had just these filmmakers and audiences who have just been really worked on, their brains have been worked on by this carnage over, 30 or 40 years, of all this crazy shit we've been seeing, really desensitizing us. And something also in the early 2000s that I feel really led to this desensitizing of the general public took place when one morning around 9 o'clock, we all watched live as a fucking airplane smashed into the Twin Towers in New York City.
Yeah, that really, really messed us up.
Yeah, and, we all watched on in true, absolute shock and horror while the events of that morning unfolded,
well,
just
that was
those
like
historic
real, yeah,
events.
Real
just,
horror.
And, in a lot of ours, we're from New England, like, New York City's not far. That's, that's like the backyard,
Went
like,
out of Logan.
Yeah, and planes had flown out of Boston. So we were watching the real-life nightmare of September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And it really shook a lot of people our age. And, that footage was just showed over and over and over and over
on
the news. That, the horrific scenes of the people jumping.
It was
real. And then the rubble and knowing what's under that rubble, and the footage of the towers actually dropping was just played fucking repeatedly for years.
Begging for their loved ones to be found.
Yeah.
That was the worst for me.
Yeah. And then out of that came war, which we were also seeing,
mm-hmm.
We were seeing, there was a lot of footage coming in from the shock and awe fucking attacks, all that bullshit. And I don't know, it really, was working on us to numb us to the carnage.
Yeah.
And
well, like our peers who were just, a little bit older than us and had graduated high school, but we had been in high school with.
Yeah, they
were now
shipping out.
Shipping off to Iraq and then coming home and telling their, stories. I have tons of interactions with kids just a couple years older than me that were overseas. And some of the things they tell you and all the stories are awful. And
yeah, of course.
Scary.
Yeah. And so it basically made us numb to the carnage and...
Yeah.
But also made us eager to see it on the screen in these creative, cool ways that were an escape from the real life shit that we were seeing.
Which you think theoretically shouldn't work, but does.
Sure
like,
does.
You think you would want to steer far away from that if you're like, you're dealing with this real life stuff and you're like, I don't want to see people die. I don't want to see blood, but you're like, it is an escape. Which
we
want to
see imaginary, scary blood because
I would love...
it's not real life blood.
Yeah, that's, I would love to know like the psychology behind that.
I don't know. We'll leave that for another episode. So the gloves were off, and in the coming years, we would see some of the most gruesome flicks to hit the big screen. Like during these years, it got pretty out of control.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's mellowed out a bit. Like, certainly boundaries are still being pushed and stuff, but this decade,
that was
like,
definitely
fucking,
trying to see where
extreme.
The lines...
Yeah, and yeah, they definitely tested the boundaries during this, and talk all about it. During the first half of this episode, we will be talking about, the original stories to come out of this decade, while in the second half, we'll talk about the unavoidable conversation of this time period, remakes.
Which are... very rampant.
Yeah, like half of the horror movies coming out during this point were remakes of classics, most of which we have already discussed in the past episodes of this series. So we're going to touch on a lot of those. So buckle into old trusty Rusty. We're going to go gonna go back to the day before those towers fell. The year before.
a simpler
time.
Freer time.
Old trusty Rusty. With Final Destination. The first in what is now a 5-movie franchise directed by James Wong, starring Devin Sawa.
He was like big.
He was a hot ticket.
In those days. All the girls wanted him. And he was like, wasn't he in Idle Hands too?
He was in Idle Hands, yes.
Yeah, so.
Yes, he was.
He's really making the rounds there.
A group of teens elude death only to be tracked down and murdered in some bizarre, mysterious ways. You know? And this one fun fact about this movie, it was based on a never-produced X-Files script.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, wow. I'm into that.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah. It's like that death coming to collect its debt, so it's a little, supernatural.
I would have liked to have seen Scully up against death. Scully. God damn, that's a whole other episode. The Scully Files.
Save it.
Yeah. So I feel this movie and really Part 2, also Final Destination 2, really set the pace for a lot of the elaborate death scenes we would start to see.
Yeah. They were gruesome and what I guess what would be scary is they were things that could theoretically happen to you.
Yeah.
You know, you could, like, have a logging truck, which is, for us, we see them.
Oh, every time I see a logging truck, I think of part two of this where the logging truck comes undone and takes out the dude's dome there. Now, if you've noticed, we haven't talked about zombies much over the last few episodes because, frankly, over the course of the 80s and 90s, the genre really got played out and then basically died out. Now, while technically not a zombie movie, 2002's 28 Days Later is often credited as being a source of the genre's revival.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Danny Boyle's intense vision of post-apocalyptic England was very well received, and we saw something that was a direct response to the ADD MTV culture. the fast zombies.
Yeah, crazy.
I'm going to eat you. Take off your pants.
Aren't they called like
rage? Get low.
Aren't they called rage zombies?
Bend over. Right? Touch your toes. Ryan D's got the pack ass. Make your booty go. Yeah, they're rage.
Rage zombies.
Rage bots. I don't fucking know.
Saw this movie at the drive-in, and it was awesome.
At the drive-in. Remember that band?
No.
Okay, they're probably from the 2000s, though, I think. I feel like they are. You know what else from the 2000s? What you gonna do with all that junk? All that junk inside that trunk. I'm gonna get you drunk. I'll get you love drunk on my humps. My hump. My hump.
Is this you trying to be Fergie?
My hump. Way hotter than Fergie. Come on. William, I am him. Sam, I am. Green eggs and black eyed peas, I am ham. 2002, also saw the release of Eli Roth's first flick, Cabin Fever, a fun tale that successfully blends elements of camp and gore to create one of the coolest and one of the most fun horror movies of the early 2000s.
I feel like we can call this one a classic.
It is now a classic. It's 20 years old or something. Where are we? It's 18 years old. Fuck it. It's
close enough.
Fuck it. A group of friends head out to a cabin in the woods for a weekend getaway, and they end up infected with a skin-eating virus, and they turn against each other. And it's just chock-full of shout-outs to many classics, including, like, Evil Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre and so much shit shouts out. Last House on the Left, who uses some of the same music from Last House on the Left. And, it's a fun one.
Every time you watch it, it's good.
It's really good. Always good for it if you just kind of, like, don't know really what to watch.
Yeah, just throw it on.
Fucking great. In 2003, we finally saw another now great horror director make his feature film debut after years of production holdups and the eventual shelving of the project at Universal Studios, Mr. Rob Zombie bought the rights to his own movie and then sold it to Lionsgate for distribution, and then House of a Thousand Corpses was finally unleashed. I had been hearing about this movie for like years that he was making it.
Yeah.
And it would just never come out. And like this back then, you know, the internet wasn't so like prevalent in everyday life.
Yeah,
so
you're gonna really hunt things down.
Yeah. So I was psyched when this was released. I remember the first time I watched it, I had, you know, a little slumber party at Tyler's house. Aw. And I was laying on his floor in a sleeping bag watching House of a Thousand Corpses.
I feel like that, like, that's right.
Yeah.
I watched it at the UNH dorms with Karen. And so it just has to, I feel like you have to just be in a room with your friends, chilling, watching.
Now, it's a great movie known for its over-the-top craziness and brutality, and this film quickly earned a cult following, but it would be the 2005 follow-up, The Devil's Rejects, that really, like, shocked audiences on a large scale, as that film received a much larger theatrical release than House of a Thousand Corpses had.
Well, it's like a real movie versus, like, that indie artistic feel. You had this one, which was, like, a real, like, major motion picture.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it really was.
The real deal.
Yep. I saw it two nights in a row. I saw it the night it came out and the next night.
Just oh, really?
Pure fucking boredom. So.
And I met half that cast.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
And this this is also the movie that put Rob Zombie, like, high on the list of the best horror creators of this generation. It really is. All of his movies are great. We're going to do a whole Rob Zombie
And episode. Some of them are severely underrated.
Yes. I believe that is the facts.
Lords of Salem is probably my favorite.
Yeah, Lords of Salem is really good.
I want to watch that movie just like every month.
Yes. Yeah, the two movies, reason we're talking about House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects is because they have completely different, like, tones.
It was really cool. So different vibe.
It was very, like, I feel audiences were very curious to see what a sequel to House of a Thousand Corpses was going to be like. And I think everyone was very surprised.
Yeah.
But, like, happy. Like, it was really good. It was way different than what I think a lot of people expected to watch when they walked into the theater. Or, like, popped it on a DVD at first, whenever the first time you watched it was. But, like, it totally worked. And it was such a cool continuation. And it was just, like, you know, you're kind of outside of this these characters, like, insane fucking world.
Yeah, and
it's
you
more
really
set in the real world, you know. And they're a little more grounded. And
well, you get, like,
pretty cool
insight more on who they are as people.
Yeah, they're batshit.
Where the other one's just kind of crazy and all over the place. And I know it's, like, super choppy because it was, like, crazy editing had to cut so many. But it's got that, like, it's all over the place and it's a little, like a trip.
Yeah, it is like a trip.
And then you get this one where you, like, there's, like, some solid character development, and you're really, like, alongside with these people. So.
Yeah. Now, we will discuss the uniquely 2000s subgenre that was one of the results of the desensitizing I spoke of earlier. Torture porn.
Yeah, oh yeah.
These are movies that often depict prolonged sequences of, like, suffering and violence, but knowing damn well exactly what the audience came to see. It's a mutual relationship between the audience and the creators. The people aren't shocked. You're going there because you want to see what fucking brutal
cringe,
thing am I going to see now.
Tense. You want to...
Really, over the years, the first of this is usually referred as Saw, was kind of the birth of the torture porn subgenre. And while the first one is more of a slow burn in that genre, its annual sequels that were released, the series became more and more wild and over the top.
Yeah,
and,
oh yeah.
Just really drove home the point of that whole genre that they had created. And I was always a big fan, and it was really something to look forward to back then. Like, there was a new Saw movie out
every could, like,
Halloween
rely on it.
For, like, 6 or 7 years straight.
I'm starting and, like, to that wonder was fun. If 80s babies were some sort of psychological experiment. As we go through this and start to kind of travel back into my own past history, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
No wonder I were so screwed up.
Yeah, and I remember I saw the first one on Halloween night with my boy Simon and Lee. And we went, and we didn't really know what the fuck it was. It was just Halloween night. We all had the night off. We wanted to go see a horror movie, and this was, you know, this was what was out.
Yeah.
And we were all just like, all right, cool, cool, cool. And then by the end, when, like, he's bashing in the dude's head with the toilet seat or we were, like, cheering. I was so happy to see a movie that just didn't pull punches, that was just badass.
Yeah, just going
to
make you a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. And also in 2005, we had Eli Roth's Hostel, which is another another example of the torture porn really being pushed forward and kind of over the next few years. It was just a lot of these kind of movies just really trying to one-up each other. And that's what all the Saw sequels were, just trying to outdo the one before
it. And they were doing the thing, too, where you know, you always root for somebody.
Yeah.
And these movies were... they were kind of disappointing you in the sense of you couldn't have, like, a favorite character. Because your favorite character is probably going to get taken out. So there was no, like, there was no heroic.
No.
I mean, sometimes, most of the characters would be dead by the end of the movie.
Yeah, and then survivors would be killed, like, early in the sequels.
Yeah. You couldn't have emotional attachments to characters. Because you never...
couldn't do it.
No one... making these movies cared if you liked somebody or not. Like, they were not here to make you happy.
Not at all.
They were just here to make a brutal movie.
Not at all. I go to Wichita! I fell in love with a squirrel.
I can't believe...
Wichita!
Can we just pause for a second and tell you forgot yourself earlier and decided to sing your version of that song in front of the six-year-old?
I go to Wichita?
No.
Go to Wichita.
I fell in love with a squirrel.
I fell in love with a squirrel. She nibbled on my nuts, and now it completes me.
Yeah. You kind of forgot.
I forgot where I was. I was prepping. I was getting into character over here. All right. Moving along to 2007, we had Paranormal Activity. It was a mix of the found footage and the spooky ghost story genre.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a big fan of this style, really, of either of the styles, but it was huge. A very successful flick, spawned a lot of sequels, and both over the next few years, there were a lot of found footage movies and a lot of spooky ghost stories that I didn't watch a lot of them. I'm sorry, I only just watched Paranormal Activity in, like, September of this year.
Going back to them, they are unbelievably boring.
Yeah, I watched that first one, and I was like, okay, I kind of want to see the second one just to see, but,
what's the most interesting storyline, like, the backstory stuff, like, you want to get into that, but the movies themselves are actually kind of boring. I haven't seen all of the Paranormal Activities, though. They maybe get better. I've seen, I think, the second one, and maybe the third one.
But I feel that maybe compared to a lot of what was going on, you know, because there was a lot of the torture porn and then, you know, like Devil's Rejects, a lot of that more shocking kind of shit going on.
This was like a palate cleanser.
Maybe this was like, this was more for the, you know, the...
the milder.
Yeah, the milder types.
They needed something to play on TV, you know, during Halloween time.
Yes, yes. So that came a lot of spooky ghost story stuff that really has been prevalent for lot of years.
Some of those are good... I don't know how to phrase this. They're entertaining in comparison to other stuff that I like to watch. It's not, like, the best.
Yeah.
But then you look at people who are not maybe as, like, seasoned in horror.
Yeah.
That is what they like. But, like, when you've really, like, deep-dived into a lot of the less mainstream stuff, they tend to feel a little, like, boring and...
get low!
And predictable and the same. But I see where people really love them.
Yeah, they are, you know,
and
they serve their purpose.
They're
fine. But just not necessarily my cup of tea. I haven't seen a lot of these kind of movies.
But we're going more obscure stuff anyway.
Yeah. We're going to end out this segment with, we're going to visit 2009 in a big way. Both with the band we're going to play before we move along here, and with the movie, both from 2009,
look,
baby. Ooh. This is a flick that I think shocked basically everyone who fucking watched it, man. Human Centipede.
Yeah, that
come on now. I watched it once, and it was late at night. I was, you know, a little lit, as the youngin said 3 years ago. A deranged doctor is obsessed with creating a human centipede. That, of course, being three humans more or less fused together by the face and ace holes. And it was goofy and gruesome and overall pretty fucking cool. It took me a while to watch it because...
Well, you have a... Yeah, you have
I don't like poop. I'm just not a poop fan. Not into scat, skibbly, bop, dee bop, boop, 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 ah, poop in your mouth. Not my thing, okay? So, but I thought it was much worse than it was because I heard people be like, oh, it's so disgusting. But these were like dumb waitresses and...
Yeah, you know, it definitely wasn't as...
I watched that and the second one. I have not seen the third one. I don't know. I just haven't got around to it. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed them. And that was... it was definitely... I think this might have been where the scales tipped a little. Looking at... It's 2009. For 10 years now, just these brutal horror movies had been coming out. The whole torture porn section of things... Mm-hmm. Really blew up. And then this came out. And then it seemed like things mellowed like out a little. Going into the next episode we'll do, things definitely chilled out a little bit. They're like, okay, we've gone a little too far. They're sewing fucking people's assholes to their mouths. And they're pooping in the throats.
Yeah.
Goddamn.
I wonder if you can follow, too, like, social trends.
That's what we've been doing. This is this whole podcast. Well, we've gone through the 60s where there was stuff going on.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, that's
we're tying it all in socially
but
and
I'm
stuff.
But I'm sure there's more to it.
I've been doing my homework here, people. I hope you appreciate it. You can give me money, you know, would be cool. I could get some fucking money for this thing. Like, I'm Jerul, put on the Fyre Fest, and I'm going to... None of you are going to get anything but a goddamn soggy sandwich. And you get to see Get Fisted Quick reunion show.
Soggy sandwich is probably more than what Fyre Fest offered anyone.
That seemed fun. I would have been positive. I would have been like, this is fun. Unless I was out of weed. That wouldn't have been good. Wouldn't have been good. Alright, so yeah, we talked about all these movies. When we come back, we're going to talk about remakes. We'll go through a little of the Japanese influence of this era. And also the honorable mentions list, which is very long because so many awesome movies came out during these years, and we're going to touch on them lightly. Just a light little touch by an angel.
Gentle caress.
Little touch by an uncle. So right now we're going to send on the replay. Won't you turn the music up, Mr. DJ? Hey, Mr. DJ, won't you turn the music up? Rihanna. All right, guys. I'm going to play a band now. This is from one of my favorite albums from the year 2009. The album being The Bishop Kent Manning, the song being Your Own Personal Time Bomb, and the band being The Motherfucking Network!
Is a good song.
Just The Network. Yeah, this song is a fucking banger. I've been listening to this song solid for like 11 years now.
That's how you know you got a good one.
Yeah. These dudes are fucking great. I befriended them back in the day in Providence over a, let's just say a bag of fungus was involved. And it was a really fun night. And we ended up, my band Sunken Ships played a lot of shows with these guys. And I saw them play all over on Providence and New Hampshire and Mass, all over the fucking place back in the day. And I reached out to Kevin. And he said it was cool to play a track. So here we are. One of my favorites. You can go listen to it on Spotify and Bandcamp and everywhere else. It's so fucking good. Check them out. The Network. They're debunked. They don't do anything currently, but maybe we can change that. Everyone, go listen to them and tell them play.
Boost those numbers.
Yeah, tell them to play a show in the middle of a pandemic. So let's do that. Sundown to the replay. Turn the music up. It's The Network with Your Own Personal Time Bomb, bringing you back to 2009, where the wine was fine and the bitches was swine.
We'll be right back.
Fucking Christ, that song is awesome.
It was good.
There is a video of that band playing in our friend Rodney's living room. Mr. Hooper, you've all heard Hooper on here before. The network came and played in his living room, man. And it was fucking nuts.
Yeah,
and
I can imagine that was wild.
It was so wild. They're wild. They had like a wall of fucking amps. It was so goddamn loud. Their drummer was just beating the fuck out of his drums. and the crowd was just popping off. Like, Phil, you know Phil, this dipshit Phil that we know. He got sent over the fucking banister and down the stairs.
Oh my god.
Oh, it was priceless. If it had been anyone else, I would have been concerned.
I those poor neighbors, too.
Hey, man, I think they were there.
Well, I mean, that works out.
Yeah, man, it was a fucking rager. But I will post on the shits the network playing that song in Rodney's living room so you can all see what I'm talking about.
It's worth a watch.
It's worth watching. It sounds like absolute asshole because it's so loud and it was filmed on like a shitty 2000s fucking digital camera, but it looks cool.
Yeah, just watch.
Just
watch it for
check it out
for the theatrics.
Now we're gonna get into the holla back girl realm of remakes.
Oh yeah,
they're hollering back at the old movies to me. I ain't no holla back squirrel. I ain't no holla back squirrel.
I love that you will just your originality is replacing girl with squirrel.
Squirrels. Two at a time, I want squirrels. Squirrels, squirrels, squirrels. I ain't no holla back squirrel. Computer, I've been around that track. Some shit. Gwen Stefani. What happened to you? She was getting all filled up with Gavin back in the day.
Yeah, she was.
Gavin in the guts. Gavin in the guts.
Oh.
And now it's... I don't know who this guy is, but I see them on the cover of every magazine when I try to buy
country
shit.
Singer, right?
I try to buy my sliced bologna, and there's Blake and Gwen on everything.
He's a country singer.
What's he say? He sings about countries? What kind of tree? That tree must smell odd. Huh. The other guy sang about glycerin. Glycerin. I didn't sing any Bush on the 90s episode. What was I thinking?
Yeah, what? Wow.
That's it. We're scratching this. Back to Trusty Rusty. Let's go. Back to the 90s.
Doing it again.
I also didn't sing Live. We saw Live.
We did see Live.
And they were actually pretty good.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
Here's the catch, though. We saw Live for like $12 for the two of us. All right.
Yeah, so that was. And Counting Crows.
And Counting Crows. Chris is a big Counting Crows fan, yep. So we went and watched it, and it was a lot of fun. We drove home with no brakes. That's a whole other story.
almost got wrecked by a raccoon.
Almost wrecked and got wrecked by a raccoon.
There was a night. But it was
a night.
It was a good night.
It was a great night.
And we made it home alive.
Full of memories. Good memories, because they became memories and not the stories people tell about the night we died.
Yeah.
They became our stories to tell.
We had to wait in the parking lot for so long.
Yeah, I didn't want to pull out of the parking lot with no brakes, because then we'd just bump into people. Oh, man. Few time been around that track. Hey, get low, get low, get low. Through the window. Oh, little walk. Somebody told me that you had a boyfriend that looked like a girlfriend
that
I had in February of last year. It's my cousin Mitchell. And it's now official. A wabba da boo ba be dee. Welcome back. Are you guys back? I don't know where we've been.
I mean, you've given them a lot of time to take a bathroom break, to get settled in.
You could have taken a bath. What you should do is fill up the bathtub and then pull whatever device you're listening to this on into the tub.
Bzzz. How old do you think they're... What kind of things they're listening on?
Are you not listening to this on a boombox?
Like an old-fashioned radio?
I thought this played on the radio. As we do it live, it plays out into the world and people have to record it and listen to it back.
Our phones could fall in the tub and be fine.
Shit. Well, find a way to electrocute yourselves then. Fuck.
You need to get in Trusty Rusty. Go back in time.
Just get a toaster.
Good old trusty
Everyone's toaster. Got a toaster. Or get an air fryer. You can't probably even zap yourself with an air fryer. All this PC appliances. Yeah, so what we're going to do now is we're going to go loosey-goosey through a list of remakes from this time period. Because while all of the movies we've touched on so far were pivotal in defining this decade of horror, some of the most successful horror movies coming out at this time were remakes of classics, mostly from the 70s and 80s, most of which we have touched on due to their classicness. We're going to go through this list. We might just throw them either a fucking a split or a splat. I don't know which one means which, but we'll see. Here we go, because it ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on Steve.
Another?
Yes, we saw Cage the Elephant open for Beck, not knowing what to expect, actually not looking forward to it very much.
I know,
I was like
so hard.
Oh yeah, oh great. Fucking what was it? Fucking Pete the Zebra.
This is my biggest eating my words.
Yep. And then like halfway through the first song I was like, oh, I'm actually really into this band and this is fucking cool as shit.
Good music and phenomenal show.
One of the coolest live bands I ever saw.
So good live.
If you're listening to this and you've never given Cage the Elephant a solid chance, especially if you might like more like rock and roll kind of music, yeah, like go check them out, man. They're actually pretty fucking good, all right?
Yeah, really good.
All right. So now this first, as these remakes started to come out, I'll really go back to, I think it was 99, where Gus Van Sant, whatever, the guy who made Good Will Hunting, he remade Psycho. And this was basically a shot-for-shot remake in color with a younger cast, obviously, fresh faces, Vince Vaughn and whatnot, and Heish. And I remember watching that and enjoying it in, like, 99. But by the time 2003 came around, I was much more primed in my horror experience. And it was, a remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out. And I vowed sacrilege. How could they? How dare they? Get low. They've gone too low. It just gets worse. Low. Skeet, skeet, skeet. Everywhere there's skeet dripping from the ceiling fan.
That's an image.
Skeet dripping from the ceiling fan. Of your mom's house. Because it ain't no rest for the wicked. Alright, so anyway. They remade Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And it took me a long time to get up the guff to watch this. To finally just get so bored to one day watch this.
Popped it in.
Ooh, I popped it right in and I was pleased.
Yeah, it's good.
I was shockingly like, fuck.
It's really good.
My brain didn't know what was happening to it. I was like, oh, wait, dude, this is good. And I was like,
Don't you hate that? Because you feel like, you're like, man, I was too judgy.
Yeah, I should have watched. I should have gone and seen this in the theater.
We do that actually a lot.
We do. But so with that, I was like, okay. So this remake trend has potential. Let's see where it goes. And where it went was Dawn of the Dead in 2004.
Which is also really good.
Really fucking cool, man. Obviously, like, and the thing with remakes that you just have to get good with yourself on immediately is if you're a big fan of the original, they're not trying to, like, make you a bigger fan of this new movie.
Yeah, they're not trying to take away.
Nope.
They're not trying to replace your dad.
And nothing will. Yeah. It's your stepdad, and it knows its place. And so that's something you just, as horror fans, we really all had to come to terms with during these years. Because I know I'm not alone in how I was pissed off at first. I was like, why are they remaking everything?
Well,
because
you feel like they're gonna like pervert your classic favorites and. Mm-hmm.
Which
and
they
sometimes
do.
They do.
Yeah. Not all of them are good, but a lot of them ended up being like decent.
Yeah.
By it.
And they're good
the
like
best,
separately.
Yeah.
Like you can love the original for what it is and love the remake for another reason.
Yeah.
And they like can be two separate entities.
Yeah. In 2005, they remade Amityville Horror. with Ryan Reynolds, fucking Deadpool. I saw that in the
theater with my cousin Jess.
I did too. I saw not with your cousin Jess, but I saw it in the theater. Shout out to cousin Jess. How you doing? And that was pretty fun. That was fine. Amityville remake. Yeah, but then, all right, listen, I got a good one here. In 2006, y'all remember this, the whole big gimmick behind this one was that it was being released on June 6th, 2006. 666, The Omen remake. This one feels very unnecessary. It's like very similar to the original, but it's like a fucking knockoff version of the original.
I feel like they did it too fast. It's like they decided, 666 is coming. We need something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's remake this. And then it's like, it felt like they just rushed it. Like they just threw it together to put it out on 666. And it just was like, I don't know, it was like messy. It felt messy.
And while the movie I was watching wasn't great, my experience in the theater that day is one of my favorite movie-going stories that I have. And I will share that with you motherfuckers. Again, I'm cursing you kind people out that are listening to me.
You're very nasty to your fans.
No, they know I love them. Two of them. It's just the way it goes. Oh, there's at least three. Listener of the week is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, Rick. So anyway, we're there. We brought a big crew out on 666 to see The Omen. My brother was in town. My older brother, Mike, the Satanist. His girlfriend at the time was around. We had Simon, myself, Dexter. I think our friend Zach. Maybe some other people. There was, but I was saying we're at least six deep. Rolling into The Omen. And, you know, we all paid our money. We all got our seats, we bet our popcorns, our candies, our sodas, probably some fucking beers we snuck in. And we're there to see a goddamn movie. We're there to see what it's all about, you know? Not expecting much. And this whole group of another fucking crew of chumps who rolled, you know, probably about six deep themselves, maybe more, it was a big crowd, but they were there just to, like, hang the fuck out. And they would not stop yapping very loudly during the entire fucking movie. One of the only times I've ever really had to deal with this. And so we all kind of gave them the little psst, hey, psst, psst, hey, psst, hey, psst. And, you know, they're kind of just ignored us, obviously. Until one point, my friend Simon just stands up. He stands up large. And he just looks back at him and he says, "For fuck's sakes, would you people shut the fuck up and let someone enjoy the fucking movie?" Fuck! And then he took his seat and we enjoyed the rest of the movie in silence.
Yeah, that showed me up. The angry Peruvian yelling at me.
Yes. And I do remember when the movie ended and they saw our whole crew stand up, because we were a mix of, like, scrappy hardcore kids and, like, big death metal dudes. They saw us and they got the fuck out of the theater fast.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite part of it is he cusses everyone out. He throws several fuck words into his display, and he ends it with just arms out. Fuck!
That is amazing.
Yes, it was a good time. So that was The Omen remake. Then Hills Have Eyes remake was good.
I don't think I've seen that one.
What? Yeah. Didn't we just watch it?
The remake?
Yeah.
We didn't watch
the remake. Oh, we watched the OG.
Yeah.
Well, ma'am, the remake is good. We'll check it out.
We need to watch
that. Then in 2007, Robert Zombie, who we've talked about a few times in this episode, he remade Halloween, which is really good.
Yeah, did a great job with that.
Really good job with it. Friday the 13th was remade in 2009, which is also pretty good. I think it's weird to say, but almost one of the best ones, which is fucking, I don't know. I don't know how people feel about that statement. But I
maybe
feel like
say something controversial here.
It might be, but it's just like really fun to watch, and it kind of gives you a little bit of everything you expect from a Jason movie.
Yeah.
And it's just pretty fucking cool. Then also in 2009, though, you got pretty bummed out with The Last House on the Left remake. It's got Aaron Paul, which is cool, but not cool enough.
No, it's not. It's not great.
It's just you expected it, especially in this time, to really push the boundaries. You know, to be something raw and new. There wasn't a lot of
the original does.
Yeah.
Push.
Fucking certainly does. And while I wanted to point out, I noticed, like, for people listening who might not be that familiar with horror movies, when we talk about torture porn, like we were in the last segment, there's nothing to do with, like, sex.
No,
the torture is the porn.
It's like people who look at interior design design porn, like, or food porn.
Yeah, like food porn, but it's so not, like, the torture is what you're there for. I just wanted to clear that up, because horror is known for its raunchiness also.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was thinking that during our little break. I was like, people who don't know might be thinking this is just, like, people getting, like, violently banged and choked.
I mean, which exists.
Well, that certainly exists, but
this is not what we are
talking
about.
That's not what it is. but that is what you expected out of a Last House on the Left remake.
Yeah.
And it fell short.
Yeah. They went a little soft.
So basically what we're getting at here is the first bout of remakes were actually more fun and enjoyable than we might have thought.
Too cocky.
Then they did. They started, and this is where the line really got crossed and fell flat and really didn't work. And we're crossing into 1 year over really the time period we're covering in this episode, but it fits into the fucking conversation. Yeah. All right. In 2010, A Nightmare on Elm Street remake was released that was just blah.
I wasted my money to see this in the theater.
There was a fucking fire drill in the theater when I saw it, or not a fire drill, like a fire alarm, for some reason. So I fucking bounced, obviously. And then by the time I went back in, because I think I went to my car and, like, tuned up real quick before I went back in, and they're like, the movie's already over. And I was like, well, what the fuck? So I got tickets to a free other movie that was probably better. But the Nightmare on Elm Street remake just didn't work, that largely being due to the fact that most of the other ones we cover, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween, Friday the 13th, all, for example, are just big dudes in masks.
Yeah. Well, there's not like that, like... Freddy is a personality.
Yeah, Freddy is Robert Englund.
Yeah.
Like, that face, the voice, the mannerisms, everything about it.
That's
all so tied into the whole persona of Freddy Krueger that to see someone else doing it just didn't feel right.
And it was too...
And the movie just sucked. It wasn't all on the dude, this guy...
He plays Rorschach.
Yeah, the guy who plays Rorschach there, Jackie Earl Onassis, whatever this dude's name is. He did a good job with what he had, honestly.
He's a good actor.
Yeah,
it's just that he was given like a pile of crap.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He just had to work with it.
Yeah, he did his best.
it was weird to see them try to make it like serious.
Yeah, well, the first Nightmare on Elm Street is fairly serious, but they
put... Freddy's not, like, a serious character.
Not eventually, no. He was a goofball.
Yeah, but I feel like even still, like...
He always was a little silly, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that's what's kind of, like, sadistic in it, is, like, this, like, weird sense of humor... what you're doing.
Yeah.
But they made it real weird.
Yeah. It's just not that great.
It's hard to explain, but it's just so bad.
Yep.
Remember, was it last year you tried to give it another chance and you were just like, nope.
Yeah,
nope,
it's fucking awful. I'll never watch it again, honestly.
No, it's not worth it.
Nope. Also in the 2000s, we got Trusty Rusty bouncing all over the place here. We're going to go back to 2000 again with this really fun flick that came out, Battle Royale, which was a Japanese movie. Where basically a bunch of teenagers are pitted against each other with various weapons. It's and like, I don't remember the whole situation, but it was badass and really cool. And that led to kind of a whole, I feel like, Japanese influence that also was happening in the early 2000s here.
Yeah, which I'm going to say, the original versions, you know how they have, like, the actual version, the Japanese version, and then the, like, Americanized
of both The Ring and The Grudge.
Yeah,
mainly those were remade into huge, like, blockbuster American movies. Yeah,
the Japanese versions are way creepier,
of course. Yeah,
and way confusing, because they take, like, a little more, like, a you kind of have to try to, like, figure it out.
Yeah,
but so much creepier. Mm-hmm. when So watch those. If you haven't, watch them.
Watch the Japanese versions, yes.
Because they are just so, like...
Yeah.
Like, you just get a little, like, ooh, yeah. Chill.
And that watching. Was back... those were back in, like, the earlier years of the 2000s. Like I said, Battle Royale in 2000, then The Ring, the American version in 2002. Then the American version of The Grudge was 2004. And each of those had a couple of sequels and some stuff. And yeah. There actually is a new version of The Grudge that looks pretty good.
Yeah,
that I do want to check out. Now we'll get into what we've been doing every decade here. We do some honorable mentions movies we just don't really have time to touch on, but are just worth giving a, you know,
yeah.
Naming, you know. We've got also in the early 2000s we had a lot of I'm gonna fucking sneeze, hold on. Get low.
Sorry, anyone with headphones. My eardrums.
Honorable mentions. In the early 2000s, there was a lot of comedy horror, and one scary movie came out in 2000.
Yeah.
Which was really good. I'm going to fucking sneeze again. Hold on to your hats!
My God.
And also Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I love Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead's good.
So good. Just the right mix. Especially, I don't know, I've probably mentioned I had like some serious zombie phobia in the early 2000s. It was a big source of anxiety for me for some reason. And this, having those like comedy ones really helped.
Oh, that's good.
Transition into now, I absolutely love that. Like, genre.
Yeah.
And I have no anxiety of it, but for some, I don't know what was going on in my brain. But, yeah, having, like, Shaun of the Dead really helps transition into that, like, loving them.
Nice.
So, gotta love a good zombie comedy.
Oh, yeah. also, we had American Psycho, Wrong Turn, Silent Hill, which... I didn't necessarily love, but I feel like a lot of people did.
Can't figure out why.
I can't really figure out why, but you see, like, some of those creatures and stuff in there a lot, and, you know, iconic,
I wonder if you, like, if you're into the game.
Maybe.
Maybe you had to be into the game. But I still, like, it wasn't good.
No, it wasn't great. No,
I mean, and it's, remember, like, we were talking about this, it starts off so weak, and it gets a little bit better as you get into it. But it doesn't pull you in.
No, it starts where too, it weak, should pull too weak you in. To save itself.
Yeah.
The Descent, which is really cool. Trick or Treat, one of your favorites.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. One of my favorites, Slither, which is really cool.
I've only watched that once.
Michael Roker. It's like, but really it is fun. Good. Yeah, go check out
it
Slither.
It is really good.
That's one I feel is underrated.
Yeah. Yeah, not a lot of people talk about that one.
Yep. Also, a cool one that maybe a lot of people don't give a chance to. Is The Exorcism of Emily Rose. That was pretty
good. Actually haven't watched that one.
It's fun. Also, we had Cloverfield, which is pretty good. The Mist.
I like The Mist.
Yeah, The Mist is good.
That one really, as I'm sure many people, it really, like, sat with me. The end.
Yeah.
The end got me. The end really got me.
All right, guys. I know we're running long on this episode. This might. I think this is going to end up being the longest episode yet. So, no. Fucking yay. 20th episode.
Yay!
Hey, it's a special.
Celebration.
Special. Celebration. I was... 2007, The Mist came out. And that was the year I also moved from New Hampshire to Rhode Island to just kind of move away from some shit in this area, go clear my head. Kind of a fresh start sort of thing in my early 20s. We all do it, you know what
yep,
I mean?
Yep, I picked that same year as the year I moved to Quincy, so.
So, I'm down there. I was staying with my dad, and I wanted to go see The Mist. I just wanted to go see a movie. I love going to the movies. And so, I'm convincing my dad to come see the movie with me. I'm like, come on, let's go see The Mist. And he says, fine, I'll go see it. But I don't like watching any movies where kids are in danger. He's like, I'm just not into that shit, you know? I didn't know a goddamn thing about The Mist except for that it was based on a Stephen King story, and I had seen the trailer. That was all I knew about it. I never read the story. So I just was like, yeah, no, I'm sure it's fine, dude. Like, I wouldn't worry about it. There's probably no kids. And then spoiler alert, if it's a serious spoiler alert, like, if you haven't seen The Mist and you don't want the end of it ruined,
yeah,
stop listening.
No, don't.
But, so... you know, if you're still listening, you know how the mist ends, or you don't give a fuck. But so they basically think that there is no help on the way and they're fucked. And so the main character has to, like, let's see, he shoots everybody.
Yeah, but there wasn't enough.
There's not enough bullets. So he chooses, there's one bullet left, and it's between himself or the kid, his son, and he shoots his son. Then, within moments after shooting his son and all these other people, help comes rolling through.
Which is, like, what they were hearing, I think. Yeah. Right? They were hearing this, like, thing coming towards them.
They were afraid of the help coming at them through this cloud, you know? And my dad just glanced over at me. And he's like, you motherfucker. So anyway, and then the last movie I brought him to see in theaters was Dr. Sleep, which has a bunch of children, starts immediately with a child in distress.
So you don't have a good track record with your dad.
I don't. And I knew about, I knew that there would be children in distress in Dr. Sleep, but they switched up, you know, some stuff from the book to the movie, so the opening scene's not the same. And I was like, there it is. Land of the Dead came out, which was cool. That was like Romero's real return to the zombie genre, and he made a few more after that kind of, aren't so great. There was Diary of the Dead and Survival of the Dead.
Diary of the Dead was... Yeah. Awful.
Yeah, but Survival of the Dead isn't bad. And Land of the Dead is cool, though.
Yeah, Land of the Dead is really good.
And also in 2007, we had the Grindhouse double feature with Death Proof and Planet Terror.
Which are
both really so well, really awesome. Good. And also Resident Evil came out in 2002, good one there. Yeah.
I watched Resident Evil... And you know that movie, do you remember that movie Pie?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a great movie.
In the same, like, back to back, and then went right to bed and had some very bizarre dreams all night. And it was a lot.
Yeah.
I kept dreaming that, you know, the little girl. Like the I kept dreaming that was Belle. It was there was so much.
Whoa. All right, guys, we're going to wrap up this episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks.
Thank you. We got the plugs. Follow me, Devolution Podcast on Instagram and Facebook and all that shit. Follow the Sean Winters Podcast, Kate vs. Kate Podcast, Square Hamburger Productions. We're asking, I know times are really tough for everybody, so we don't really expect much, but anybody listening, if you're able, dear friends of ours, family of ours, do a toy drive every year that benefits hundreds of families in our area.
And it really, I mean, these families.
Yeah, the people who need it, you know.
They are so grateful. They need it. They're struggling.
Yep.
They're worried. And this just brightens their season. And it's.
Yeah.
It really, like, it has helped so many families.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can go check them out on Facebook and read all into it and see that it's a completely legit thing that's been going on for years. Great guy behind it all. And you can donate to them if you are able. You can donate at Dave-Friends-Toy-Drive on Venmo.
And go to the Facebook, which is Dave and Friends.
Dave and Friends. Yeah, Toy Drive, I think.
Toy Drive, yeah.
So check that out. Check out the network. Thanks, guys, for letting me jam your tune up on here. And follow the playlist I got on Spotify, the Devolution Podcast Tunes playlist. It features a ton of songs I featured on the show, including that tune from the network. I've only got two more episodes in this series we're doing all about horror movies. And so we're going to do 2010 through 19 in the next episode. Give me your suggestions, really, because there's a big time gap in a lot of movies coming out in that time. Just did not look good to me, and I never watched them.
Thing.
So hit me up with some stuff. A lot of movies from, I'd really say from, like, I think it's like 15, 16 and on, there was a lot of good stuff with, like, The Witch and Hereditary, stuff like that.
Yeah, Get Out.
But
real
it ends
good.
Up getting good. But the first first half of that decade, I don't know a lot about those movies. So if you got some suggestions, let me know.
Yeah, I think I've actually seen more from that time period than you have.
Yeah, probably.
Also, correction, the Facebook is Dave and Friends Local Area Toy Drive.
So you heard it here, folks.
Facebook it.
Yeah. So we're out of here with a band, Trophy Hunter. There, I think they want to remain anonymous, but good friends of mine. We'll just leave it at that. Trophy Hunter, the song is called Corona with Lime. This is a little sneak peek action here. It'll be officially released on this upcoming Saturday, November 28th, on Bandcamp and YouTube, and will eventually be on all streaming. So we're out of here. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving. Please be safe.
Yeah, be safe.
Enjoy.
Enjoy
but
safely.
Be smart.
Yeah, if you got to just chill at home with your family, your little family.
And don't be upset about it. Just make the best of it. Yeah, it's really the most you can do.
Have a good time. Keep your eye out after I post the episode and shit like that. I'll put up that network video over at Hooper's house, too. Mm-hmm. That'll be fun for everyone to see. We're out of here. Trophy Hunter. Premiere track right now. So thank you guys for letting me play this. I was in a pinch for a tune tonight, and I hit up my buddy, and he was like, I got a little something for you, dog. He sent this
awesome.
My way. So thanks for coming through, dude. Check them out, and make sure to follow them on Bandcamp and all those places as it all unfolds for them. They're a new project. So bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Of you and me. This is to you.